My name is John Wedger. I'm a retired Metropolitan Police detective. I was a specialist in vice and child protection investigations. I came to prominence for my role as a whistleblower, in which 10 years ago I spoke out about the Metropolitan Police's and the institution's deliberate cover-up of what was termed child prostitution. I now campaign for justice for victims and survivors of historic child abuse.
Well, we are. We've just heard about this. The conviction of this guy Nick Gatwick, who I knew after the Newbury bypass protests. I mean, I've offered to talk to the Spy Cops people about this, but they haven't got back to me, which is a bit peculiar because obviously I knew the guy and I knew quite a lot about him. But anyhow, the point being, he's now a convicted paedophile. The actual 38 offences apparently of related to paedophilia, but he was recruited as a originally the Daily Mail calls him Swampy, but he wasn't really tunnelling at all. What he was doing, he was working with activists on the Newbury bypass protest, which was led by Friends of the Earth back in the late 1990s. This was in order to try and stop the destruction of a whole load of trees and forests, and the whole thing was a bit of a farce because by just building some dual, roundabouts, so that the A34 could actually run underneath a roundabout rather than have a roundabout in the middle of a motorway, which is effectively what was going on around Newbury. If they'd have just split level junctions, they constructed a few of those. They wouldn't have needed a bypass, but they decided they wanted the bypass. Various people explained to us as campaigners at the time that actually it was the landowners that had bought the land all around the route of the bypass that were pushing for it more than anybody else because they knew there'd be development there in the future. And but anyhow, so Nick was he was a radio engineer. He was building transmitters. He went up a tree. He helped create something called Tree FM, which was broadcasting around about a 3 mile radius around the tree, which was covering most of Newbury. So this was on most of the time. It was a battery powered FM radio station. Some of Nick's contacts in London had been producing cassette tapes for it, which would go in and then auto reverse. So they were it was quite a well-produced radio, and they even had their own I don't know if he produced it, maybe not, but their own jingles on this FM pirate radio station as part of the protest. So that was Nick. He was a director of a company called Broadcast Warehouse, which is based in Wadden, and he'd been working for many years with pirate radio stations in London, helping them to get out to London. But anyway, as a police informer, which he clearly was, I'm intrigued really about the idea that perhaps the police have got something on him, which maybe was this interest in child pornography, and he's got something on the police as well. So he's saying, well, if you decide you want to prosecute me, I can come out with all the things that you've been up to and I've been up to together. But it has all come out now, and he's now being about to be sentenced, John. So can you just say something about the way this whole business of informants works? Because it seems to be a pretty, I mean, with the Spy Cop scandal as well, it's proved that that these informants are actually having relationships, even having children with the targets, and those targets haven't necessarily even broken the law.
Well, I mean, yeah, these are individual cases. I don't think it's fully representative of informants in general. But what we've got to get right is the fact that informants, when they say the police have something on him, well, of course, that's why he's an informant, because he would have been a criminal. Most, near enough all informants are criminals. If a non-criminal wants to give information, then they just simple as that, they ring up Crime Stoppers. They used to have police 5 years ago, which was just a way of using what are known as unregistered informants. So this guy would have been a registered informant. He would have probably been recruited as a result of an arrest. He would have worked under a pseudonym name that the police would have given him. and he would have participated in the commission of crime. So he'd be what's known as a participating informant. So it's covert policing. It's how it works. And, you know, people don't like it, but, you know, crime's a dirty game. And the police sometimes use what morally might be seen as dirty methods, but that's not to say they're unlawful. I mean, where would we be in a free society if we hadn't have utilised spies during the war? And it goes on to this day. So spying is nothing more than informants. So that's how it works. So if he's got something on the police, well, okay, good luck with that one. A lot of us had stuff on the police, but try suing them. It's a difficult game. And it's a dirty game. But with undoubtedly, he would have been a criminal.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because a lot of all the techniques around informants, these informants should be targeting serious organised crime. And it seems in many cases, so for example, in Newbury, people hadn't actually committed any crime. Yes, they were squatting in trees, etc. But this isn't a crime. And they were doing a peaceful protest in the way of a bypass. And there was a method of dealing with that, which was a series of evictions, etc., etc. But they were peaceful campaigners. I mean, it seems to me a million miles away from organised crime, actually, John.
No, informants aren't used specifically for serious and organised crime. Informants are used for crime, and that's that. But, you know, what was going on with this guy, if you say it's Swampy, if it's the same one, I think he was still active when they were putting it in the HS2 link in Euston. I think I remember hearing his name mentioned only a few years
ago.
Well,
hang on. Swampy is a silly journalistic thing which has been used by the Daily Mail. I mean, Swampy did exist, but Nick was doing something rather different. You know, he was, and also he didn't have a pseudonym. His actual real name, it turns out, was Nick. He was known as with a nickname of Radio Nick, and he was also involved in the 1990s all around London in helping pirate radios get going. I also heard from him directly that he'd been involved in the early 2010s. With the Royal Navy in equipping two of their warships with transmitters from his company in Wadden in order to broadcast FM and medium wave radio signals into Libya as part of the overthrow of Colonel Gaddafi. So he was no Swampy at all. In fact, in a way, that's a way of sort of diverting people away from who he was.
I think in what you said, it's quite clear that he's a covert operative. And he may well have been a military intelligence asset. I mean, with the protesters, policing is compartmentalised. So each unit will utilise informants. So we could utilise informants for murder trials, utilise informants for drugs, for antisocial behaviour, and also for public order. The public order branch utilise informants quite a lot. And the public order sector is very, very heavily infiltrated. In fact, having worked on the covert side of it and actually the covert side of public order policing myself, you know, the undercover officers, they're in two categories, right? You've got level one and level two. Level two are the ones that just go around really and deal with what they call laid on offences. So if someone's selling drugs, they just go along and buy the drugs. So it's mainly the drug buying. The level one is infiltration. And one of the infiltrating covert agents that I work with turned around to me and said the easiest group that we ever infiltrate are the so-called crusties, the New Age Travellers. He said all you have to do is smoke a joint or even infer that you like cannabis and they accept you. He said, because a lot of them come from middle-class backgrounds, he said their naivety is, you know, is breathtaking. Whereas when you get entrenched criminal communities, you know, I'm not slurring anyone, but such as the Gypsy and Traveller community, it's been almost impossible for the police to infiltrate them because, you know, they check the provenance of everything. And, you know, you've got to be sponsored in. The same with the mafia, you've got to be sponsored into it. And then, so if you're entering into quite a serious organisation, there has to be an introduction made. The person who introduces is usually three people detached from the actual deployment of an undercover officer, a UC officer, into these networks. And that's how they do it. They don't just do a direct referral. It's referred to someone who then refers them, who then refers them, and that's how they get in. So it's detached by about three positions just for safety reasons. If he's known as Nick and that's his name, and you can't use anyone else other than Nick the radio, then he will have to keep that name. So that's not uncommon either. But when you put in, say, someone who's not known in that criminal fraternity, look, they may keep their name, but the police would have given him an agent name. He wouldn't. His docket in the covert police in locked cupboards would not be Nick. It would be under a pseudonym name. So if anyone ever broke in, they wouldn't know who he was. And then the pseudonym names would be in another file with his true identity. So the police would refer to him as someone totally different. But, you know, he may well have to keep his own name because that's what he's known as, and he's going to infiltrate that community. So that seems a logical way of doing it. And you'll never know. Even if it goes to trial, it's very, very rare. The police will always deny, unless the agent betrays themselves, the police will always deny their informant, always. Well, and I had that with a very serious drug importation case at Leeds Crown Court. And one of the co-defendants, he claimed to be my informant. And I couldn't prove he was, and I couldn't prove he wasn't, because, you know, the party line was, you deny it, you know, and that's that. So it's a very, very murky and complicated world. And the gangsters know it as well. The serious organised criminals know it as well. So they always muddy the waters and claim that there's an informant running. And a lot of criminals, the clever ones, they will actually proclaim to be informants when they're not. They do that quite a bit. And it's you become their insurance policy then. And I've had that happen to me, where people have claimed to be my informants and actually wasn't. And they've done it really to get the trial to collapse. And it usually comes out in respect to disclosure. But in respect to this guy's criminality, I mean, if he was caught with child porn images and he was found guilty at Crown Court, he hasn't put in an appeal. And if he didn't protest, you know, his innocence, it might infer that that is the case.
Well, I mean, he put me in touch with a guy who was involved in Operation Orr, who was a computer expert, had been an expert witness for the police, and had started to turn against the police and started to appear in court for people who were being prosecuted under Operation Orr. Now, this was around about 2000. This was quite an interesting, complicated case where loads of credit card details were sent over to the UK from the US and Canada, and the British police were looking through them saying, well, all these people have been accessing porn from this website. We've got all their details. Why not just prosecute them?
Yeah, I mean, Operation Orr, it came from, it was a Canadian post office started it, and then it moved on to the FBI got involved, and it was people accessing child pornography and paying for it. Back then you had to pay per view, and they paid for it via credit cards. And it's a bit like bank robbers doing over a bank and having their getaway in a car, and they usually use a stolen car. So, it would be prudent to use a stolen credit card. And back in the 90s and the early 2000s, credit card fraud was very prevalent because there wasn't many, chip and pin wasn't in. And one of the main sources was to buy them off a postman. And that's what people would do. They'd buy credit cards off a postman and then they'd use them, whether it's goods or, you know, there's nothing saying that you couldn't use it then to access porn sites. But then also they'd be looking at IP. You know, people use lawful excuses. But then the job of a detective is to look at evidence that goes not only towards a suspect, but goes away from them. And they've got to explore avenues in which someone could potentially get off with things. And some people do come out with lies. It's not uncommon. But then you've got to disprove those lies. And one of the things might be the IP address. It's unique to a computer. then that computer is accessible by a password, which is unique to the user. So the police need to establish, beyond all reasonable doubt, that the person standing before the court accused of indecent images was the user. It was their computer through the IP address, and that they did pay for it, albeit from a stolen credit card or whatever. And is there any chance anyone else could have had access to that computer, access to that password? And if so, then they should be brought in as well, and they should be questioned as well. And if no one else was brought in on this case and questioned, it may be indicating that the police have no need to, because that is a man they got before the court. And that is a man that is found guilty beyond all reasonable doubt.
What you seem to be saying here is that Operation Orr was undermined, and possibly by this guy Jim Bates, who Radio Nick put me onto, was one of the people undermining it.
Well, I mean, Jim Bates was a man that had, a discreditable personality anyway. I mean, he was a man that lied about his expertise. He sort of wangled his way as a forensic expert and then was recognised by the National College of Policing. Therefore, he was utilised by investigators to give his professional opinion on electronics and that. And it turned out it was a lie. He wasn't even vetted properly. And now the CPS are reviewing any prosecution that has relied on Bates's evidence.
One of the things that I find so fascinating about Radio Nick, and one of the reasons I kind of got to know the guy, was because he'd been involved, as I said, in the 1990s in the pirate radio scene in London. Is it feasible that a police informer would be running up tower blocks, working with pirate radio stations in order to get illegal broadcasts out across the city for up to a decade, even maybe a few years more?
Yeah, of course. Very feasible. It's the same way as they would have people involved in supplying heroin and, involved in bank robberies. I say they're called participating informants. You need very high level of authority. But if you've got an informant, you've got a man on the inside, you save a fortune on surveillance, manpower and overtime. So informants, they're the ultimate inner to any sort of organised crime. In fact, it's difficult to run an investigation into sort of serious cases like that without the presence of an informant.
We have a bit of a problem, don't we? Just, for example, with the climate camp, the informants are quite well known. Mark Kennedy, I believe, is his name, and there's various others.
Yeah.
But there are all sorts of stories have come out about that, where it looks like he wasn't just an informant. He was, in some aspects, leading the campaign. He was determining the direction that they were taking.
Well, he was coming up with results, and he wasn't properly checked on. He wasn't supervised properly. And again, it's a very ego-driven. I mean, Mark Kennedy was a level one infiltrating informant. And the ego with these people, because you get elitism, was through the roof. And he was just a guy that sort of self-managed, and no one ever reined him in or checked on him properly. And that's what went on. But while they're getting results, a lot of the time, the Home Secretary is happy, just crack on. And they didn't envisage it to go pear-shaped the way it did.
Yeah, or to go public. I think the interesting thing is some of these individuals do sort of go native. They say, well, actually, I don't agree with the way I was used. But part of the SpyCops inquiry, which is still going on, various people who could be giving evidence are not giving evidence because they've seen that the authorities are simply not cooperating at all in many ways. And, they're supposed to be delivering up lists, the judge has told them to, but they won't because, as you said, they're denying it. They're also saying that, we do things differently now.
Yeah, well, they've had to do things differently. I mean, where they're going to fall down is when it comes to disclosure, because probably a lot of the decision-making paper records, which would have been back in the day of Mark Kennedy and that, they're probably long gone, or they've been shredded or they've been burned. So there'll be no real record that will incriminate either the undercover officer or their controller, their handler, which will usually be a detective inspector. So these people will all be covering their own arses. And you'd be foolish not to. You know, I'm not agreeing with corruption, but it's a natural thing to do. And they have changed as a result of what's gone on, because, you know, there was also the same unit was involved in slurring the name of the Lawrence family. And then there was crossover with some involvement with the murderers of Stephen Lawrence and the people involved in that having connections with organized criminals. So it was just it's just dirty, and it's, you know, and corruption gets in as well. And like I say, the three elements to a lot of police failings, it's firstly, it's laziness. Then it's incompetence. And lastly, it is corruption.
Yeah, the corruption is also, you know, this is also part of the, it's partly the cover up. But what about the National Crime Agency? This is a relatively new player in the game. It's been slated as the Britain's version of the FBI, which is something which is a bit closer, I suppose, to security services, MI5 and Special Branch than the former system, so of which I think was called CID. But what do you make of the fact that this is the National Crime Agency, the NCA, hailing this case with Radio Nick Gratwick as a great, you know, great success? What is this organisation? And I wonder whether there are others that they could and should be prosecuting, like, for example, bankers or banksters, people who are supplying weapons, for example, to genocidal regimes. But they're not, you know, so they're not prosecuting some of the white collar criminals, the big guys. And it may be that people like Nick are kind of seen as low hanging fruit.
Well, that's exactly what he is. He's low hanging fruit. But, you know, we've got to be certain that Nick is innocent. I mean, he may well be guilty. He may well be, as the Crown Court results show, a paedophile, a registered sex offender, as he is now, a convicted Schedule 1 sexual offender. I mean, we never really know people. You know, no one is ever going to admit to possessing child pornography. They all deny it. It's incredibly rare for anyone to put their hands up. And if they do, it's because they're stuffed. So they usually say, oh, you know, that's all I had, and I'm really glad you caught me. I needed to stop.
Look, I ought to say a couple of things. That is that the people that knew him, certainly me included, had our suspicions about him. You know, I think we were all quietly saying, well, Nick, you know, is he really who he says he is? Is he really? So there was that aspect to it. But then there's also the possibility that isn't it feasible to plant child pornographic images on somebody's computer and get them like that?
Well, it's highly corrupt. It's illegal. You know, I'm not saying I've never known it be done, but I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm not saying people can't get stitched up. And you've only got to look at the case of Colin Wallace, who was stitched up for murder when he was exposing child murders in Northern Ireland. So, but it's an excuse if you're caught with child porn to say that the government planted it on me. But I suppose anything's possible. You know,
the other aspect to this, John, is it makes me wonder. I mean, if he was a useful informant, as he clearly was, I mean, there's another aspect to what he told me, and I've got no way of checking this out because he was living at the time in Mitcham in a house which was apparently owned by his former partner running this company, Broadcast Warehouse. And his partner had shacked up, he told me, with a Chinese girl who was, he said, was a bit problematic. You know, this girl was, you know, quite difficult. And then his partner was found dead outside as if he'd fallen a couple of stories from the top balcony down onto the patio below, and the Chinese girl disappeared. I mean, to me, this was one of the weirdest aspects of it, because he was actually living in this place, even though he should have had money. I mean, he probably did have money, or maybe his own rented place or even buy a place. But this Chinese aspect always struck me as a bit peculiar. Like, He also took me to Wadden, which was the headquarters of Broadcast Warehouse, and it was clearly a real place where radio transmitters were being built, some of the top end ones for the entire world, and they were making some money in there. They were making the old FM style digital and the digital transmitters too, the modern ones, you know, and they were sending them out all around the world. And so it was. It seemed clearly to be a profitable, viable business. But in the background, you've got this weird, what looked to me like a kind of Chinese spy who's bumped off his partner, who's the boss. So that, it doesn't seem, has come out in the court case at all.
Well, I think that's something he needs to inform his legal team of. I mean, the other thing, if I was him, what's to stop him taking part in a polygraph test? And asking questions about, does he have a sexual liking of children? Does he watch pornography? And if he's innocent, he's going to pass that.
Yeah, it may be both, though. I mean, I get to think, I'm getting to think that, you know, that he got involved in all this world because the authorities knew they could control him because he had this child porn habit. But there may have been other aspects to it, you know.
Yeah, that would be more feasible. Without a doubt, that would make a lot of sense. I'm not saying the police don't stitch people up because they threaten me with the loss of my home, my job and my children. So I have been through that, and you know, they put cases on me, and they tried to stitch me up. One case of conspiracy to supply Class A drugs. I mean, I've never taken anything stronger than an aspirin. So, so I'm not saying that the police don't stitch people up, but I would say that is more feasible, that this guy had a dirty little secret, and the police or the institutions have exploited it. But going back to what you were saying about the National Crime Agency, we're looking at a unit that's forever changing its name. I mean, it started off as SOCA, the Serious and Organised Crime Agency, and then it became the National Crime Squad, which I would rather go with, because a squad, you know, it is a policing term of uniformed and detective warranted officers, whereas an agency...
It sounds like the Flying Squad.
Yeah, you know, squads. The police has formed as squads, the murder squad, you know, the paedophile squad, you know, there's loads of them. But, you know, the National Crime Agency, what does an agency do? An agency just passes stuff on. And it's heavily civilianized as well. So the British public deserve better than a civilian agency. They should have warranted officers dealing with it. And I'll give you an example. I was approached by an ex-colleague who retired last year, a detective of middle management rank. And this woman would come up to me, and she ended up on the National Crime Agency. And it was to do with people smuggling. And she said they were watching a commercial industrial unit, and they were watching a unit. It was Unit 9 in this trading estate for 2 years. Huge, huge bill for surveillance, manpower, overtime, everything. She made a fortune. And what they've been doing is they'd actually watched the wrong unit. They ended up watching a plumbing unit, which was Unit 9, when they should have actually been watching Unit 6, and someone had looked at the paperwork upside down. So the 9 was a 6. So, you know, and for 2 years, I don't know what the bill was, they watched the wrong unit because someone looked at the paperwork upside down. I mean, is that corruption? No, that's incompetence.
Absolutely. Well, this comes through secrecy. There's too much lack of trust. And you've got to understand, I think that the Russians have got it right, because they got rid of computers a few years ago, apparently, in their serious crime policing departments, and they just talk to each other and write things down and type things on paper. Well, they don't use computers at all.
Well, when you get to the real core of policing secrecy, and I'm not on about the intelligence agencies, maybe it's higher than that. I was dealing with information on what would be a secret level, and it all had to be handwritten and hand delivered. Now, that's good, and that's also bad, because handwritten things can be shredded and burnt, and existence can be denied. Whereas when they're on a computer, there is an audit trail. When it's handwritten, there is no audit trail. But when things got higher up, and this was to do with people high up in our establishment involved in child paedophilia, and the information I had involved police officers involved, and it had to be handwritten and then hand-delivered because of the corruption. So they know that corruption goes on. I would say with this guy, you know, an informant's no good unless he's dirty. They've got to be dirty people, otherwise I can't work with them. A clean person is very difficult to manage, because a clean person will say, well, send me to court, send me to Crown Court. I will stand up, and like I did, I stand up and I will be tried with, a panel of my peers, and they will see that I am innocent. I'm not frightened of you. But if you're dirty, you would always have that hanging over you. And they will use it. And do you know what? It makes sense to use it. And they do it all the time. I mean, even look at how financial agencies do it. You know, they stick all these fines on you. And the same as parking fines and everything else. And you say, do you know what? I'm not paying it. So they do the same. They bully you. So, right, we're going to give you a bad experience record and bad this. You'll never get a loan. You'll never this. And they bully you the same. Because they need you to have a credit history, a debting history, and they can exploit that. You know, insurance companies do it. You have an accident, they charge you more, and you become their prostitute. So it's used on every single level of society.
Wow. Yes.
So it's not just exclusive to the police.
That one of the principles of capitalism seems to be a kind of organized bribery, you know, whether it's to do a particular job for a living and a career. You know, there's an element of, well, even if you don't want to do it, we'll pay you a bit more and you will do it. You know, there's an element.
Yeah, of course.
Look, we had this big case recently with Mandelson being thrown out. There's now information out just this week about Tony Blair going to meet this guy, Epstein. My own view is the real player in all of that was Ghislaine Maxwell. She was finding the little girls to take to Epstein Island, and then that was being used to entrap people. Are you surprised that Mandelson has lost his job as British ambassador to the United States and that Blair is now being fingered?
Well, look at this, shall we, right? So I can only go on my experience and my knowledge, but it sort of branches into that world. I dealt with sensitive information. I was what they call a field intelligence officer, right? So I had to be vetted. And I had to be vetted to a security level. I think it's SCV. It's the highest level you can get. There's all different levels of it. Now, the highest level, they want to know everything about you, your financial history, your family history, any members of your family in prison, any of your friends been in prison. And they also want to know your sexual history. And they even ask you about your sexual partners. And people, and this is not a slur on anyone or anything, but it's a factual thing that they go by. So a woman detective sergeant who was dealing with the vetting, she said, I wouldn't pass that vetting. I went, okay, why? She said, because I'm a lesbian. And a lot of gay people fail. There is a higher chance of promiscuity. Now, not my words. I'm not endorsing what she's saying. I'm just telling you. And she said, one of the ways in which someone can be prone to blackmail on that is through their sexuality. And it's a lot more prevalent and easier to do with homosexuals. Okay. Now look at Mandelson getting that position, such a high level position, and they didn't bother to vet him. Oh, come on now. This is the British government. Mandelson is even mentioned on Dr. Joan Coleman's Reigns list as of people involved in Satanism. He's named on a public document compiled by a leading therapist, a professional woman at the Maudsley Hospital, as being involved in Satanism. Right? Would that not go against him in vetting? Well, surely it would. So why was he given that job? He was given that job because he was dirty. There was numerous allegations made about him and his involvement with young boys. They've not gone away. They're still there. You know, these aren't clean people. And look at Ghislaine Maxwell. Look who her father was. You know, a Ukrainian gypsy Jew who changed his name 3 times and, you know, and all the corruption around him and the links to the British and Israeli intelligence services. And with the word intelligence being, you know, the key word here throughout, intelligence, intelligence, intelligence. And you're telling me that it was just by bad luck they didn't know that these people were involved in paedophilia? Like I've said many times on my interviews, years ago, you could bribe someone for being a homosexual. But you can't do that anymore. You know, in fact, sometimes it goes in their favour now because of
this posit discrimination and things like that, and quotas for minorities. But years ago, you could bribe someone and hang them over a barrel because of their sexuality and the fear of exposure. And luckily, people like George Michael sort of blew that out of the water, because he said, do what you want. I'm not frightened of being gay.
Finally, John, in a nutshell, how do you tell if someone's an informer? Is it possible?
Well, if you ask them, they'll deny it, because that's a training. But one of the key ways is this. There's certain communities and certain criminals, right, that they found it very, very difficult. Like I said, the travelling community. They need you to know who you was, your lineage, your family. There needs to be some sort of sponsorship. And there's certain serious and organised criminals that got away with it for a very, very long time. And one of them was people like Curtis Warren, the drug importer from Merseyside. And he was a clever, clever man. And he knew. And so did the gypsies know that they are going to be infiltrated by the police. They know that. But also what they know is the police cannot and will not ever use children in their covert investigations. They're not allowed to, right? So what they would do was say, well, look, if someone appears on the scene, a new criminal that sort of wants to get in with them, and there's suspicion, and there should be natural suspicion, someone turning up and wanting to work with them. So Curtis Warren and people like that would say, well, come along, we're having a barbecue, bring your missus, bring your kids. And the police, of course, what they say, oh, well, I'm divorced and I've moved away from my missus. And I'm the same old story they come out with. You know, I've got a girlfriend, you know, it would be another police officer, you know, but I'm, you know, my missus and kids, it's acrimonious and blah, blah, blah. So what you do is just F them off. Just say, right, go and do one. I'm not interested.
How the professionals deal with it. Anyway, look, John, we've got to finish now. So, John Wedger, thanks very much for joining us again.
So my pleasure, Tony, my pleasure.